Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Edris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Our guests today are here to discuss the latest edition of the Malaysia Racial Discrimination Report. It's an initiative by the human rights organisation Pusat Komas to document incidences of racism in Malaysia, but also to record our responses to racial discrimination instances. So Ryan Chua joins us today. Ryan Chua is the Program Director of Pusat Komas. Also, two-term Suhakam Commissioner Gerald Joseph, advisor to Pusat Komas, joins us as well. Welcome, gentlemen, to the show. Appreciate your time here. I'm going to begin with Ryan, and I think I want to focus on the report, the findings of the report. This is the seventh edition, the seventh year Pusat Komas has been tracking incidences of racism in Malaysia. I'm just wondering what was different about this report, and maybe you can begin by telling us, in a nutshell, has the situation improved or worsened?
Right, so as you have articulated it earlier, the Malaysia Racial Discrimination Report aims to document incidences of racial discrimination in Malaysia. And that's the key idea of why we actually spearheaded this initiative. Because when we talk with regards to issues of racism, racial discrimination and xenophobia, for instance, it's often not, you know, it's always there, you know, but it's not documented. So this was an initiative that we have done since 2015, trying to document and for us to also see how has things improved over the years. So to answer your first question with regards to what is really different, I mean, of course, we have special reports in a yearly basis, and one of the key components of our reports this year was the findings from the social media monitoring of the Melaka state elections, on especially specific focus on the race and religion, the use of race and religion in the elections by political parties. And of course, just to also answer some of your questions, like, you know, how has it moved and how what are the differences we have seen? Yes, there has been an increase of incidences of racial discrimination and xenophobia in Malaysia since 2020. But of course, it can be seen that, you know, we were all mostly stuck at home in 2020 because of COVID-19, right? So, you know, when we are talking with regards to 2021, everyone is out now. There are even more people out there speaking out, and it's all captured by the media. So basically, that's where we can also see why there's an increase of numbers of incidences of racial discrimination.
But of course, you know, social media, you know, you didn't have to leave your house to rant on Twitter, for instance, or on Facebook. And, you know, Gerald, if I could pose this question to you, this is a kind of a Malaysian condition, right? We live in a multi-ethnic, multilingual, and multi-faith community, and there are always going to be tensions. But do we have a consensus on what constitutes discrimination? One person's identity politics becomes another person's act of discrimination or exclusion, right? So is there a consensus, and is this report and these reports, do they create the kind of conversation where we achieve a consensus on what we mean by these terms?
So I think the effort to try to have a standard common understanding was actually efforts done after the National Unity Consultative Council report to create a National Harmony Commission, anti-hate speech bill. So there were three bills proposed, and it was growing, of course, under the PH government. Now it's out of the realm. I think those questions should have been answered, but de facto, we don't need to look very far. We have the general principle in our federal constitution, Article 8 of non-discrimination. You know, general principle: no one should be discriminated. Of course, at the use of the United Nations human rights variety of documents, including the child rights, women's rights, disability rights. Of course, ICERT, the so-called boogeyman, boogeywoman of Malaysia, ICERT, has a very clear definition on what it is. I think the express intention and motive to discriminate based on your identity is what we fight against. The celebration of who you are, you cannot change that DNA, the color of where you came from, where I came from, you know. The smell of food that excites me may be different from Ryan or both of you. But that's because we grew up with that. You know, that does not mean if I keep looking for that food, I'm discriminating against the other. But stopping somebody else from celebrating that, then there is deliberate action. That will be the demand of equality. So in the test of how to celebrate your differences, that's fine. But if you put in measures to stop you, and then when we use the word identity politics, we hear in Malaysia a lot of people saying, I'm doing this to help my community, my race, who still needs protection.
The protector.
The protector of the Malays. You know, we hear that so much. The question is, you need the protector of the people. Anyone who discriminated needs protection. And that's a human rights framework. No one should be left behind. The Sustainable Development Goals use that language. What it simply means that if you need somebody to bring them forward, that's fine. But if you do something to leave people behind and put gloat one over the other or laud one over the other, then I would question that is racism.
Okay, well, if I may just follow up on the second part of Sharad's question about reports like this, about the Pusat Kamas reports and all the years that you've put this out, has that contributed to the conversation? It seems that sometimes we don't really want to address perhaps some of the root causes of racial discrimination in Malaysia, some of the incidences that happen. We kind of try to sweep it under the rug. And, you know, with reports like this, it kind of forces you to talk about it. But then how do we ensure that the talking about it is actually constructive and useful for growth of a nation, as opposed to it being, you know, contributing to the racism and to the stereotypes? I'd like to hear from both of you, but Ryan first.
All right. So, I mean, of course, when we have reports like this, it really irons out and it also shames certain groups of people, right? So, of course, we have tried in commas as well, we have tried to have these forms of engagement, these forms of conversations with the groups, with the political parties, even the perpetrators themselves. But oftentimes, it's always, you know, they do not entertain. I mean, they know that this is happening, but the idea that we want to tell them is that, look, we are watching you. So stop all this nonsense, you know. And of course, those forms of conversation, of course, we try to bring this conversation to the ground as well. So apart from having those forms of conversations only at the top level, with the political parties and the politicians, you also bring these conversations to the people on the ground. So oftentimes when we bring it to them, they'll be like, oh, okay, is this really happening? They are not really aware about this as well. So again, it works both ways. And that's one of the main reasons why we have this report as well, because it helps to raise awareness. You know, of course, politicians at one point, we are shaming you and we're telling you stop doing all this nonsense. Of course, on the ground, we are also telling the people that, you know, look, these are incidences that are happening. And, you know, this is going to affect you. You know, now it's not affecting you, but in the future, it may affect you. And what would you do, you know, in such instances? So these are the conversations that we are having. And of course, in our grassroots engagements that we have done, people are a little bit more like, oh, these are my rights. They don't even know that, you know, these are some of the things that our country has. For example, you know, in this report, we also outline our international commitments. And they do not even know that, you know, Malaysia has actually pledged to do certain things at the international realm. But back then, at home, it's a totally different overview. So again, you know, this is how, you know, we try to educate, to raise awareness via such reports like this. And it has gained traction actually over the years that people are actually waiting and anticipating for it as well.
I don't know how far we can shame politicians, that they can feel shame, but...
So I think what Malaysia has not done is to have a record of the victimization of people. And I think this cuts across, because every ethnic group will have a case to say that when I went to look for a job, I didn't get it because I think it's my colour or my language. So I think it cuts across. It's not one particular group will get like a championship of, oh, and I'm the most worst victim. There are some who get it more. But I think we have not done this enough before because of our false notion that we celebrate. We are, you know, you started, Sharad, by saying we are multi-religious, multi-ethnic, those words that are used so often, which we are, but so are so many other nations. And really, what's the big deal? In the plurality index globally, we are placed at around number 50, 52. The top 20 plural countries, which are more ethnic diverse groups, would be some Burkina Faso. Canada is also in the top 20. We are in the 52. So I'm saying, okay, we do have issues, but what's the big deal? Every country will have a diverse, especially now with intermarriages, it will just be growing diverse. So let's get on with it and stop this false narrative that, oh, we are so united. So talking about it is bad. Actually, talking about it is necessary to find where the root causes, where the fault lines that we have not addressed. And I think that's why these reports and other reports should actually speak about it more openly. But sadly, we don't have a racial...
Right. I think one of the reasons, of course, is that, you know, under the rubric of sensitive issues, mm-hmm. is this feeling that once you bring it out, it actually creates defensiveness. People who are being accused of racism often feel that they're under attack, and their first course is to accuse the accuser of being racist, and so on. So we know that the Malaysian default mode of dealing with this difficult conversation. But I want to ask you whether you, in your can kind of conceptually make a difference between the institutions that we have, public, especially public institutions that we can hold accountable because we have these charters and texts that we have signed on to, and the more difficult realm of society, where it's really about people, and it's really about families, because probably racism is rife in families. We'll have racist parents, and we'll have this, and people will say, you know, don't play with those kids, and so on and so forth, right? How difficult is it to deal with that level of the problem? Because institutions you can hold accountable in ways that you can't hold families and communities and localities accountable.
I think that's a very interesting question. In fact, I mean, one of the research that we have done recently was on to actually ask Malaysians and to feel and ask them, what do you think about the Malaysian identity? And what I found really interesting from the results was that, you know, people find that being a Malaysian is ambivalent. And why do I say ambivalent? You know, at one stage, they are very proud and happy to be a Malaysian. And at the other stage, they feel like, oh, I'm not too happy to be a Malaysian. And why is that so? You know, it's a lot of confusion, a lot of things that are actually making that a little bit more like, you know, there are certain things, certain characteristics that I'm happy, you know. For example, one of the things that we have found from the positives in our research was, you know, the ability to preserve and uphold their own cultural heritage. So, you know, me as a Chinese, I can practice my own cultural heritage. I can go to the temple, I can speak my own mother tongue. I also have mother tongue education. So for me, that's something really good for me. But of course, in the negative side, there are others who felt that, you know, when there's another group coming to me and trying to impose their values onto myself, I become very defensive. So that answers your question with regards to, you know, the society. You know, we are really living in that status quo in that sense that, you know, I'm very comfortable. But when people come to tell me and meet me and say, you know, look, you have to degrade yourself, you have to cut off your cultural heritage and your feelings and your emotion, your identity, I become very defensive. And that's how we have to handle, because the problem now is that we are talking about unity, we're talking about diversity, but we are not respecting each another for their own identity as well. That's what we are happening today. So when we have groups and politicians coming over and say, no, look, we need to protect, you know. But again, you're not trying to understand what are some of the issues that these other cultural groups want to push and, you know, want to position themselves. And that's the problem that we are having today in Malaysia, is that there is a huge lack of understanding of different cultural practices and their own identity, and we become very defensive. Because when I, for example, recently, even in the humanitarian efforts that were happened after the flood, the Gurdwaras, they were actually preparing vegetarian food to help the victims. People become so defensive and say, oh, it's not halal. You are, in that sense, I'm really imposing my own values onto the other, and people became like, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, why are you doing such things? You know, I mean, like, it's vegetarian. There's nothing about halal or haram. It's like, there's so little and lack of understanding of different ethnic groups and their cultural practices. And that's what we are having and facing today in Malaysia.
Okay, well, we'll take a quick break, but let's come back and continue this conversation more on Consider This in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. So much for staying with us on Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutun, and we're chatting to our guests tonight, Ryan Chua and Gerald Joseph from the human rights civil society organisation Pusat Komas. Their latest Malaysia racial discrimination report included a chapter which looked at the patterns of discourse on social media during the Melaka state elections last year, particularly as it relates to racial and religious messaging. Ryan, I do want to come to that chapter that was tracking the Melaka state elections. And one of the points in the report cited that the most often conversations regarding race and religion actually originated from politicians. and or their political parties. I'm just wondering whether you could share a little bit more about that.
All right. So there are really three key topics that actually emerged during the whole Malacca elections. Firstly, is of course COVID-19 concerns, party hopping. I mean, we are talking about party hopping as well, and of course race and religion as well. But one thing that is really interesting from our research was race and religion receives the most number of engagement. And what do we mean by engagement? Meaning that people actually share, people retweet it, people comment it, and all that kind of, as compared to COVID-19 concerns and party hopping. And it to a certain extent, it feels that, look, people are actually having these forms of conversation in social media as well, like what you have mentioned in the beginning. So, of course, most of the things that we have found is that, you know, it is a technique that those the political parties and the politicians use during the elections. And some of the key messages that came out, you know, because we actually monitored quite a big, huge number of keywords, including controversial terms like, you know, for example, people say Article 153 is controversial, even Malay. And we also look through all kinds of different terms which are specific on the in Malacca. And what we have found is that, you know, BN and UMNO actually has the highest number of party communication on race and religion based on race-based policies. So it's comparatively to UMNO, DAP and all that kind of stuff. You know, BN actually has around 2,200...
BN, that's Barisan?
Barisan National, okay. And UMNO specifically. So they have 2,392 even mentions in that, you know, as compared to all the other political parties. And it has become a really big model that they use in their... But when you look in terms of religion, then you have PAS, of course, because of the Tima issue, the whole controversy about the 4D shops and much more, which were actually covered there. So when you can see comparatively, you know, in our report, we actually... What we have done is that any topics related to race and religion, you know, if there are also groups which promotes and fights against race and religion, and the opposition parties are focusing a lot in terms of bringing people together, countering race and religion. But when you see BN, PAS and PN, for example, it's a lot very skewed towards one direction, race and religion. Yeah. So that's in a nutshell, actually.
Gerald, I mean, is it too easy to attack politicians? Because, you know, one thing, politicians are constantly producing stuff. I mean, they're constantly speaking, they're speaking to the media. So their speech is always captured in a way that, you know, other institutions and life worlds, you know, in Malaysia, say, schools or prisons or, you know, the bureaucracy, you don't hear that because nobody reports generally unless there's some big event, right? So... Is this report kind of skewed unfairly, as it were, towards politicians and political life in Malaysia when it comes to looking at questions of race and religion and identity, that misses the fact that there's a huge range of Malaysian life that isn't captured?
Well, I don't think it's unfair. Probably it's under-reporting, I don't know. Because there's so many issues never captured because it's off the radar of, I think Pusat Komas has done social media or media. How much is reported could be just a drop in the ocean of what is really spoken in the hallways of power and discussion. But that brings me to the question of, we demand a different standard of political leaders. So there's a different, in a chit-chat, tetare shop, a chit-chat, okay, well, you shouldn't do it, but they're still doing it. But if you are elected to the House, Dewan Rakyat, or more so, minister or deputy minister, you have a responsibility, a duty, actually, to uphold the legal provisions of non-discrimination, of equality. You have a moral duty to stand up for equality. And I think this is where, I think, Sharad, just now you asked about the public institutions. I think the public institutions belong to all Malaysians. So you cannot use that to discriminate, and you cannot use that as a ground that I want to do something more for one group and the other. People react, because this government is duty-bound as a government for all peoples in Malaysia. If you want to only govern a certain group, then you don't stand up to be a politician for the nation of Malaysia. I think that's why the division to rule by ethnicity, I think, does not work, because your honour to the House when you take the oath is for all Malaysian. So I do not stand for anyone who comes to play identity politics.
Okay, can I just say this? You're speaking in normative terms, what ought to be. But what the politician turns around and says, look, Malaysia, 70 years or close to of independence, and the system has worked based on not just the interests of one community, but in a coalition of interests, right? So for them is, look, we haven't been warring with each other. Look at other countries, Sri Lanka, this, that, and the other, fought. Whereas we have kept the peace by saying we have a coalition of interests. Yes, it's ethnic, but it still works. So people might turn around and say, but you are imposing standards that are unrealistic. And I'm not about Malaysia. In fact, this is how politics in Malaysia works.
If it's worked, then why are we having this conversation today? The very fact that race is still on the table, literally on the table now, that means it's not resolved. It is pushed under and coated with lovely colours of pain that Malaysia can always produce. I think, as you said, the root cause, the element, if we cannot stand up to feel, I will defend every person around me, immaterial of ethnicity. But if the very fact politicians still need to win based on ethnic speeches, and they have two speeches, one when it comes close to crisis moments, one when it's a proper situation, they will change the speech. And I think we need to call that out and say, it's got nothing to do with 70 years of Malaysia. 70 years of Malaysia was an arrangement for a developmental phase of the country. But that era is over. This era is an era where everybody feels pain and they state it online. They demand for, why am I left out? Even if I want to rent a room in KL and they say, sorry, only Indian or only Malay, people say, how dare? The common person can feel that pain, and there's no more that to say, oh, you know, this kept the peace. And of course, we kept the peace because we are wise people, different experiences, don't want to lose things that we have got. And everyone is vested in this country. So I don't think that means we should not speak up and say that formula of before is not the formula of equality that is demanded of every person. It's not about the what should be, what am I losing at this very point as a person in Malaysia?
Okay, so with that in mind, and with us wanting better from our elected politicians, and knowing that politicians will use campaign periods to stoke race and religion in perhaps their messaging, what should we, citizens, voters, keep in mind going into what we expect is the next 15th general election? Ryan?
I think holding them accountable for whatever they are doing. For example, if you have a deputy minister of unity who is spewing racial statements or, you know, being racist himself, then we have to tell him and say, look at your portfolio, look at who you are. You're representing all Malaysians. You know, in the electorate, there's also many other races and ethnic groups there. So we as voters have to be very clear. You know, I'm voting that person because I know he will protect my interests as a Malaysian and not from a particular ethnic group. And I think we have to have this awareness when it's coming to
elections. Is the unity, the Ministry for Unity or Unity Ministry, is that effective in bridging racial discrimination?
Well, at this point of time, I mean, it's a big question mark. I mean, there are efforts. For example, we have the National Unity Blueprint. We have so many other policies, but we have not seen the implementation of it. So, of course, all our things are floating in the air. We are still waiting to see how it is. But when they have a deputy minister speaking out this way, there's still no...
But Ryan question. Said yeah. effort. But I think then the action of the minister to not pursue the National Harmony Commission, I think, speaks volume. I think that was framed in a very independent framework of resolving the root cause issue, all the small petty things. Politicians cannot handle it because they have vested interest. But if a national, independent National Harmony Commission was set up, that would have taken us away from the politics of race. But we missed that chance because the minister announced she's not going to pursue that anymore.
Yeah, so very quickly in the last minute or so that we have, what do you think people should do? I mean, is reading a report, because I know that very few reports ever get read by the general public.
90 over pages.
Yes, I mean, 90 pages is you know, probably slim compared to, say, the climate change report that was 3,000 pages. but all very important issues, right? So how do we take this conversation further, Ryan?
I think this report, yes, not many people read, but it serves as a documentation of things. So, of course, now these forms of conversation that we are having is also excellent because we are raising awareness to the general public. So, of course, you know, we need to continue talking about these issues because we cannot sweep things under the carpet anymore. And the more we have swept it, the more we get this hostile situation that we're having in Malaysia today.
Yeah. Gentlemen, I want to thank you both for coming on to the show tonight. Appreciate your time. That was Ryan Chua and Gerald Joseph of Pusat Komas. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Adrian.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching.
Good night.
Good night.